the opening of the Eid, the celebration of that pilgrimage. So millions of Muslims have journeyed to Mecca, to the place of prostration, to that Kaaba, the house of God that is empty in the center. And the waves of humanity have been winding their way, also in a labyrinth, winding, a tawaf it's called, and witnessing to that oneness. So it's beautiful to be gathered here. People have also made a pilgrimage in a way to be here together, to join hearts together. And Shamsi Tabriz says something really beautiful about that process of the waves of prayer that are focused on Mecca. When the Muslims pray the form of Salah, the bowing and the prostration, it's always in one direction, which is towards Mecca, no matter where you are in the world. But Sham says, that prostration, if you remove the Kaaba, which is empty, which is an empty space to the infinite, everyone is bowing before each other's hearts. And there's a beautiful saying in our tradition that the faithful one is a mirror for the faithful. And that can be understood both as that, we are each mirrors for each other, and that deepening of faith, sharing that. And also, one of the names of God is Al-Mumin, the one who is faithful, who is the most faithful. So the faithful is a mirror for the faithful. It's also that we are a mirror for that one. And there's this dance of mirroring happening. There's a beautiful calligraphy over the entrance of the doorway of Rumi's tomb. When you go inside, if you turn around and you look over the door, it's called a double who, this calligraphy of who and who, and who is, it's the pronoun of divine presence, mirrored. So the sense of the divine and the human mirroring each other in this beauty. And to understand it, it's a lovely word, the who. Sometimes we chant it. Yes, dear? It's almost, yes, almost like this. Yeah. Yeah, because there's a sort of a loop and a valve, So it's very similar, actually. Another metaphor. Yeah. And it's such a beautiful sound, it's like, you can think of it also as, WHO. It's just HU in the Arabic. But who, or the breeze, that breeze of being. And there's a lovely little passage that Mevlana wrote. One day he was speaking, actually he spoke it, he didn't write it. Often, he wasn't writing, he wasn't sitting there with a pen writing down. Other people were writing for him of things that just bubbled forth from that spring. And he was speaking about this, this saying that the faithful one is a mirror for the faithful. And he said, "The creator of souls made a mirror of water and clay and held it up before himself. When the sun shines into a mirror, what can it say but I am the sun? He went on to say, that means that God, the Mumin, manifests himself in the mirror of his faithful servant. If you wish to see God, look into this mirror. He said, when the iron of my existence was polished by his love, it became a mirror that reflected the universe and was no longer metal. So we're given all these beautiful ways to engage in that polishing. And revelation upon revelation has come through the hearts of human beings to be shared with communities, to open into that love. And yet sometimes we feel, maybe we don't belong, or our faith isn't good enough, or things like this. And it was, we were sharing a bit after the gathering this afternoon with Lisa about a friend. We were, some years ago, we gathered a group of friends and we made what's called the Lesser Pilgrimage to Mecca. There's the formal Hajj that happens at a certain time each year that changes with the lunar calendar, but it's just 10 days each year that everyone in the whole world of the Islamic community will engage in. But one can also go any time of year and make these same rituals. And it's called the Lesser Pilgrimage or the Umrah. So some of us were going to go, and there was a dear friend in our community, and we were just checking in with her to see if she was going to come, and she said, oh, I don't know if I'm really a Muslim. And it was interesting, her reflection of that, because, again, it mirrored some of the cultural understandings of what it might be to be a Muslim. So we, shared with her around that, and reminding her of that sense of surrender, which she is so beautifully surrendered. And again, it may not be, a particular moment that someone may be called to participate in a particular form, but to understand what's at the root of faith. And there's a beautiful passage that describes it. So melting away some of the layers that we place upon things, upon religion. This is one simple statement from the Quran, from the Surah Baqarah. In the name of God, the infinitely compassionate, the infinitely merciful. Alif, Lam, Mim. These are some of the mysterious letters that begin some of the surahs, just sort of opening us beyond words to that pouring of the infinite. And it says, this divine revelation, this book, let there be no doubt about it, is a guidance for all the God-conscious, the mutaqin, those who stand in taqwa, this sense of vigilant care in awareness of God, standing in that awe. Those who have faith in that which is beyond the reach of human perception, faith in the unseen, and who stands in that steadfastness of prayer, and who spend on others out of what we provide for them as sustenance, out of that Razak, one of the names of God, the sustainer and provider and nourisher, and who have faith in that which has been bestowed from on high upon you, as well as in that which was bestowed before your time. I'm just recognizing this continual flowing, this continual conversation that's happening between that infinite reality and this humanness that we are. It is they who in their inmost being are certain of the life to come. It is they who follow the guidance from their sustainer, and they who will attain felicity. We were speaking this afternoon a bit about poverty, you know, and the poor ones. And then we sang that song about being a melting candle. You know, and it's so beautiful the way the universe is continuing this conversation. I went back to the room and opened an email. And we now live in Louisville, Kentucky, but we used to live in the Bay Area. And there's a circle that continues to meet there, and they share with us the readings that they've chosen for their meetings. So I want to share with you the reading. This is a passage from Rumi. When through spiritual poverty someone is graced with non-existence, like Muhammad, he loses his shadow. Fana, this annihilation of the false self. Fana graced the prophet who said, "Poverty is my pride." He became shadowless like the flame of a candle. When the candle has become entirely flame from head to foot, a shadow has no way to approach it. The waxen candle fled from itself and its shadow into radiance for the sake of the one by whom it was made. God said, "I molded you for the sake of Fana." And it replied, "So I took refuge in Fana, in that melting." So surely there's a window from heart to heart. Hmm. reflecting, you know, on this call to love, this deepening of love, there was an awareness, you know, of one's own lack sometimes of timely response, you know. And the sense of attention that we've spoken of, you know. And I was drawn back to some gatherings of passages from the Quran that relate to this. And this sense of taqwa that we were just speaking about, that vigilant awareness. You know, sometimes it's spoken of as, you know, just awareness of the beloved's presence and not wanting to miss that. You know, this call to prayer, whatever form it might be that we engage in, you know, to understand it as an invitation into that deepening of relationship, that diving into that intimate presence. And you know, there were moments, you know, even in the lives of the prophets who were the strong, you know, such strong ones in that relationship and in that presence, you know, of, you know, just moving off beam a bit. You know, there is a moment in the life of the Prophet Muhammad when he was sitting, sharing with some people in Mecca, trying to communicate with them, you know, about what he was receiving, sharing some of the revelation with them. And he was sort of aware of someone coming up near him and wanting his attention, you know? And it was a blind man who was trying to ask him about this faith and this love. And he kind of turned a little bit and frowned a moment as he continued the conversation with the other people that he was sitting with. And this was the moment shortly after that, that there was an opening of another chapter of the Quran revealed as he frowned, al-abasa, and you know, he was taken to task for turning away from the blind man who was sincerely asking of him. And this is part of the Quran, you know. So continually we're called, you know, to those moments of discernment of how to care for each other, you know, how to hold in preciousness the yearning of another soul. And so we gathered a few passages just to share with you later. We have some copies in case they may be of some support, you know, or a tool in your toolbox. These are some passages about courage, strength, and vigilant awareness. This passage is from Surah Al-Ma'idah, which is another beautiful surah about the feast, you know, that's continually coming down to us. It says, O you who have attained to faith, stand firmly in your devotion to God, bearing witness to the truth in complete fairness, and never let hatred or dislike of anyone lead you to make the mistake of deviating from justice. Be just. This is the closest to being God conscious. And remain conscious of God. Truly, God is well aware of all that you do. Stand firmly in your devotion to God and bear witness to the truth in complete fairness. And another short passage. Whoever supports a good cause shall have a share in its blessing. And whoever supports a harmful cause shall be answerable for his or her part in that. For indeed, God watches over everything. And another. And God sets forth as an example to those who have faith the wife of Pharaoh. Interesting. Witness, she said, O my sustainer, build for me in nearness to you a mansion in the garden, and save me from Pharaoh and his actions, and save me from those who do wrong. Also marry the daughter of Imran, who guarded her chastity, and we breathed into her of our spirit, and she witnessed to the truth of the words of her sustainer and of his revelations, and was one of those devoted. See how God has purchased of the faithful their lives and their possessions. In return, theirs is the garden, and so they struggle in God's way. It's so beautiful that the wife of Pharaoh is mentioned, you know, and as that one who took Moses into the household. And it's so interesting, you know, what sometimes we human beings do with things as things evolve over the years, because I was mentioning earlier about the organization I've been part of called WISE, the Women's Islamic Initiative in Spirituality and Equality. And one of the tasks that the Shura Council, this sort of closer council of people who've been somewhat immersed in the tradition, was tasked with, was to compose a statement in support of adoption. And I was really surprised. I had not understood that in some cultures within Islam, adoption has become haram or forbidden. And especially, you know, the taking of a Muslim child into a non-Muslim home. So we had to go back, you know, to the original sources and reconstruct the beauty of this and how amazing. Even, you know, in the Quran, the wife of Pharaoh is spoken of with such honor. And she was one, she wasn't Jewish. You know, when she took Moses into her home, she found this baby in need. And she protected him and stood against her husband who was trying to kill all of these children. So this world is an interesting weaving, you know, that happens. And to keep coming back to that truth, you know, of standing in devotion, finding that clarity, letting falsehood wither away. That's another beautiful passage. Actually, I just opened it when we sat down. I opened this collection, and it's a good reminder. Say, O my sustainer, cause me to enter upon whatever I may do in a true and sincere way, and cause me to complete it in a true and sincere way. And grant me, out of your grace, sustaining strength. And say, truth has now arrived, and falsehood has withered away. For witness, all falsehood is bound to wither away. Yes, that's a passage from the Quran, dear. Thank you. That's the Quran. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And there's the saying of Hazrati Ali, who was mentioned earlier, courage and truth are always found together, like falsehood and cowardice. Courage and truth are always found together, like falsehood and cowardice. Mm-hmm. Yes, you know, Hazrat Ali is a beautiful being. He was the son-in-law of the Prophet Muhammad. He married his beautiful daughter Fatima, and was one of the closest companions and became one of the leaders of the community after the Prophet's passage, the fourth caliph. And there's a beautiful story about the Prophet Muhammad. And so Mevlana was sitting with the friends one day, and someone asked him, you know, when the Prophet made his mirage into the presence of God, that journey into the presence of God, you know, what did he and God talk about? And Mevlana said, well, it said that, you know, God shared 70,000 secrets with Muhammad. And he told Muhammad, half of these you can share, you know, choose a few people to share these with, but the other half just keep close to your heart. So when he returned from this journey into that presence, he shared, you know, some of these secrets of that intimacy with some of the friends, and some especially with Hazrati Ali. And Ali kept these close to his heart, but there came a time when he was just burning with these secrets. And he went out into the desert, and there was a well, you know, there. And he leaned over and just sort of poured his heart out into the well. And it happened that there were some reeds growing around the water. And a shepherd came along and cut one of the reeds and made it into a flute and began to play. And Muhammad heard this music and he said, "Ah, this is something of what I spoke to Ali." So this is the Ney flute that you were hearing. That voice of that intimacy. And there's another part to the story which is very lovely, because there were at that time people who were very devoted and really immersed in this revelation that was coming through and in the devotion of prayer. And they would sit outside where the mosque was and on sort of a bench area. So they were referred to as the people of the bench, the al-Sufa. So this is one of the derivations of the word Sufi. Some say it's also for the rough woolen clothing, you know, but some of these were the first Sufis. Mm-hmm. And so they were immersed, and one day they were speaking, you know, about the intimacy that had come to them, and the Prophet began to hear some of what they were saying, and he realized that some of it was of that other half that he hadn't shared. And he went to them and he said, "How did you know this? Where did this come to you from? From where did this come to you?" And they said, "Ah, from that same one who communicates even without a prophet or an angel." Mm. And there's a little passage so that I get it right. It's so beautiful. Not coming back across it, but it was something like this, that, you know, there is, beyond Gabriel, there's another Gabriel. You know, there is that one that is communicating to our hearts in such a mysterious way. and that we each have that capacity, that we are each gifted with that heart that can know. There's such a beautiful hadith, actually. Actually, Kabir, can you pass me one of those little packets right there? It's in there. Thank you. We'll pass these out in a minute. Here it is. This is a hadith qudsi. That means it's a saying of God conveyed through the prophet outside of the Quran. So this is God speaking. My love belongs by rights to those who love one another in me, to those who sit together in fellowship in me, to those who visit one another in me, and to those who give generously to one another in me. This is our birthright as human beings. Another verse in the Quran says, truly those who have faith and do rightful deeds, the deeds of wholeness and reconciliation, the most gracious, the most compassionate Ar-Rahman will endow with love. As it is said, he loves them, he, she, that one loves them, and they love him, her. Sometimes, you know, the mind has to go through its journey of ascertaining that, you know, of examining all the aspects to come into that still place and to be able to sit together in me. And it was beautiful to be reminded by a friend in Turkey recently of the fact that Hegel, the great philosopher, had discovered Rumi and loved what he was sharing about love. And I'll share with you just a phrase at towards the end of his whole huge encyclopedia of philosophy. After the chapter on religion and art, he comes to this question of love, and he says, in the excellent Jalaluddin Rumi in particular, we find the unity of the soul with the One set forth. And that unity, described as love, this spiritual unity is an exaltation above the finite and vulgar, a transfiguration of the natural and the spiritual. And then he footnotes some of Mevlana's poems. And We'll share a couple of those that he footnotes in the older language of the sweet English translation that comes in his encyclopedia by a Miss May Kendall. So Mevlana says, "I'll tell thee how from out the dust God molded man, woman, because the breath of love he breathed into his clay. I'll tell thee why the spheres their whirling paths began. They mirror to God's throne love's glory day by day. I'll tell thee why the morning winds blow o'er the grove. It is to bid love's roses bloom abundantly. I'll tell thee why the night broods deep the earth above. Love's bridal tent to deck with sacred canopy. All riddles of the earth dost thou desire to prove. To every earthly riddle is love alone the key." And another passage speaking to that freedom. "Life shrinks from death in woe and fear. Though death ends well life's bitter need, so shrinks the heart when love draws near, as though 'twere death in very deed. For wheresoever love finds room, there self, the sullen tyrant, dies. So let him perish in the gloom, thou to the dawn of freedom rise." So we remember that melting candle again, and the gift of Fana, of melting, as in the passage that was shared last night, of that melting snow. You know, let the self be that melting, whether of the flame or of the water. You know, wash yourself of yourself. You know, to open that lily of the heart of love. And we've spoken some of Rumi's friend, Shamsi Tabriz. Such a fiery force of love. And such a beautiful friendship. You know, sometimes we have the example of a more hierarchical passage of teaching. But this was an example of two beings able to meet each other in fullness and emptiness. And Shams's words were often very succinct, and then Mevlana would open them into beautiful rose gardens that we could wander about in. There's a gathering of some of Shams's words that can be something of a touchstone. He said, the work of a real human being is not to attach his or her heart to anything except that one, God Most High. If a mystic gives his or her heart, he or she will receive love like those described in the Quran, those whom he loves and who love him. I've seen nothing more beautiful than humility. Be satisfied with what you have in your hands and have no expectation of what is in the hands of others. The glory of prophets is their prophethood, that of the wise, their humility, that of saints, their compassion, that of the poor, their contentment with little, that of the rich, their generosity, that of the worshippers of God, their solitude, their halavat, their drawing close. Keep your religion through generosity and good character. You cannot escape death, nor can your portion flee from you. As it was said, your daily portion is fixed in advance, as well as the length of your life. A greedy man will remain deprived. A miser will be accused. The envious will grieve. But a mystic will be the object of God's mercy. To try to change your fate is useless. You can't live beyond the appointed time given to you. However, you will not be deprived of your daily portion, nor will you be given that of another. So why are you killing yourself? O child of Adam, wealth is in contentment with little. There is security in solitude, freedom in the absence of desire, friendship in lack of envy, joy in patience. There is no glory for the greedy person, nor is there humiliation for the person who is content. The free man becomes a slave because of his immoderate desires, and the slave is freed through contentment. There's a beautiful little story, since it's the time of the completion of Hajj and the opening of the Eid. There was a moment in Mevlana's community when there was a merchant who was going on Hajj. And before he left, he went to ask Mevlana's blessings. And some time passed, and you know, it's a long journey back then to get from Turkey to Mecca. And after some time, it was getting to be the night of Arafat. This is like the climax of the Hajj, when all of the faithful gather at the same time around this hill of Arafat, which is also understood as the place where Adam and Eve reunited after being expelled from paradise, that they found each other and met again at this place. And it's also a reenactment of the resurrection of everyone standing in this plain together, dressed in this simple white clothing. And everyone is sleeping in tents. Yes. And so it was the night of Arafat, and back in Konya, the wife of the merchant went to see Mevlana, and she brought a big platter of fresh halva, this beautiful homemade sweets, and asked if he would, you know, hold her husband in prayer for the completion of this journey and the blessings of his offering of pilgrimage. And so he began to pass around this platter of halva, and the dervishes were eating and enjoying the halva, but they looked and they realized the halva platter, it was still full. And after a while, Mevlana picked up the full, still platter, and he went out onto the terrace, and they were kind of wondering, you know, what he was doing, where he was going, and he came back in and without the platter, and they said, well, you know, what were you doing? And he said, well, I wanted our friend to also have a taste. And, you know, some time passed, and the pilgrims were returning from the Hajj. And the merchant went barefoot immediately to greet Mevlana, and then he went home and he was unpacking his bags, and his wife is helping them, and she pulls out her platter. And she said, How did you get my platter? I know this is mine. It's my pattern. See, it has, you know, the inscription. But how is it in your baggage? And he said, oh, it was a mystery. We were in our tent the night of Arafat. And suddenly, a hand pierced through the tent with a platter of halva. And it was so delicious, and we ran to look to see who had brought it, and there was no one there. And so she explained that she had taken this halva and what must have happened. So in the morning, they returned to Mevlana to thank him for his generosity and grace, and he said, ah, this is due to your devotion. So to recognize that that hand from the unseen is coming to serve us the sweetness continually. Yes. And like God's fish, in another moment, someone was asking Mevlana about this, and another merchant who had gone to Damascus after greeting Mevlana, and when he arrived in Damascus, suddenly he saw Mevlana in the shop where he was going. And when he returned, he said, but how is that possible? I just saw you in Damascus. And he said, ah, you know, God's friends are like fish in God's ocean. They can raise their heads wherever they wish. So maybe I'll just close our sharing tonight with another passage from Rumi. Stir a little, like the fetus, in the womb, that you may be given the senses to behold the light. Then you will leave this womb-like world and go from the earth into a wide expanse. For as it is said in the Quran, God's earth is spacious. It refers to that spacious region where the saints are at home. The heart isn't weighed down with that broad expanse. There, the fresh boughs of the palm tree don't wither and become brittle. Sometimes you bear the burden of your senses. You grow weary, exhausted, and stumble. Yet when you sleep, you're carried aloft. Your fatigue falls away, and your burden and pain and anguish are taken from you. Consider your sleep as a taste of that state in which the saints are soaring. They are asleep like the men of the cave, even in rising and turning here and there. God is moving them without trouble or consciousness of theirs, to the right and to the left. What is to the right? The deeds of wholeness, and to the left, the affairs of this body. Both come from the saints, but like an echo, they aren't paying attention to either. Joseph said to his guest, "Come, offer your gift." The guest sobbed. "How many a gift," he said, "did I seek for you? No worthy gift came to my sight. How should I bring a nugget of gold to the mine? How should I bring a drop of water to the great sea of Oman? It would be like bringing cumin to Kirman, the source of all cumin. If I were to bring my heart and soul as a gift to you, there is no grain that is not already in this barn, except your beauty that has no equal. So all I could bring you is a mirror, like the inner light of a pure heart, that you might behold your beautiful face within it. O you, who like the sun are the candle of heaven, I have brought you a mirror, O light of my eyes." And he drew forth the mirror from under his arm. The fair one's business is with a mirror. And what is the mirror of being? Non-existence. Bring that as your gift. Amen. I